from KXJZ in Sacramento. This is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Coming up, we'll talk about some of the top stories in the news with Marcus Bertone of the Sacramento Bee. Also, we'll try and answer some pressing questions about fireworks. But first, another local casino planning a big expansion. Last Wednesday, we talked about Thunder Valley near Lincoln. Their plans include a high-rise hotel. Today, we're going to look at what's planned at Cache Creek Casino Resort in rural Yolo County. Their plans include hundreds of new hotel rooms in a tower and a couple of dozen hillside casitas. Some locals are concerned about the impact of all this growth in an otherwise quiet area served by a two-lane highway. We're going to check in with a member of local government, a local resident, but we'll start with Randy Takamoto, general manager of Cache Creek Casino Resort. Randy, welcome to Inside.
Thank you very much.
Why does Cache Creek want to get a lot bigger?
It's a situation, Jeffrey, of meeting the needs and desires of our demographic, our customer base. You know, we're pretty much operating at full capacity in our hotel. We're running 99% plus occupancy and have been for a year and a half or so. We're turning down so much business. It's a situation we think that there is a need to accommodate that pressure on us. Otherwise, we feel from a competitive standpoint, we're going to lose the business. You talked about Thunder Valley last week and their plans for an expansion, and we all read in the newspaper this morning about Shingle Springs and their compact that they signed. You know, so you have within, you know, the Central Valley here, the Sacramento Valley, three potentially casinos that are vying for the business of a pie that is, you know, finite.
You said that Cache Creek needs to meet the needs of its customers. How important are the needs of the residents in the vicinity of the casino?
Needs of the residents are equally as important. And we have our tribal environmental impact report that we're addressing right now in the entitlement process, and all of the issues and concerns that were raised, that are being raised, will be addressed.
The hotel rooms will be inside a 10-story tower, is that right?
Yes.
That's a big departure from the current layout of the Cache Creek Casino Resort. There are several-story high buildings, but 10-story tower would be quite a big change.
It's 10 stories. It's backed, you know, backed into the rear of the property. So it's not, you know, entirely on Highway 16 in your face, so to speak. The nature of the 10-story hotel is a condition of what our analysis has told us we could do comfortably and profitably as far as the number of hotel rooms are concerned. And, you know, we need to go up as opposed to out. And it's a design function of having the convenience of the players closer and more centralized to the casino itself, with the restaurant functions and the spa functions and everything else.
We're talking about the planned expansion, a big expansion of Cache Creek Casino Resort in the Capee Valley in rural Yolo County. My studio guest is Randy Takamoto, general manager of Cache Creek. On the phone is someone who lives quite close to the casino, Tom Frederick, who's owner of Capee Valley Vineyards. It's a family farm in Brooks, which is in the area of the casino. Tom, welcome to Inside.
Good afternoon.
What do you think about Cache Creek's plans for expanding?
Well, obviously, the valley itself, for your listeners that haven't been here, is a relatively small valley with obviously limited resources. So I did want to also point out that the casinos basically do have a monopoly. It isn't like I can start a casino next door. So competition isn't as big a factor as it would be in a normal operating environment.
Specifically, what about the expansion plans trouble you?
Well, obviously...
Sounds like we lost Tom Frederick there. Randy, could you briefly respond to that notion, to what Tom was saying there about the casino being lacking competition, and I guess by implication that you can do what you want?
Well, I'm not sure if that's an accurate statement. Competition is all around us, and it's the competition that's forcing us to to react the way we are. When Thunder Valley opened up their casino 4 years ago in 2003, we lost a huge percentage of our database living in the Sacramento area, specifically overnight, and it had a tremendous impact on us, and it took us a while to get back to even. It's, you know, when you're drawn from an hour and a half, 2 hours radius, any casino within that, I feel and believe strongly, is competition. And as I said, there are going to be three now vying for most of the market.
We hope to go back as soon as we can to Tom Frederick of KP Valley Vineyards, who lives in the vicinity of Cache Creek Casino. Also, we hope to join us by phone is Mike McGowan, Yolo County Supervisor. Until our phone problems are resolved, we stay with Randy Takamoto. I've been told that Tom Frederick is back on the line. Let's see if he's there. Tom,
yes.
Can you hear me? Great.
Yes, I am.
You were going to tell us specifics about your concerns, what you specifically are concerned about with Cache Creek's planned expansion.
Well, obviously, the access to the casino is a big problem that impacts heavily the communities from basically 505 to the casino. So, you know, I think that a lot of the residents would like to see the infrastructure resolved before mega casino is instituted.
Such as what kind of infrastructure are you talking about?
That could be as a road, it could be a rail line, it could be a number of different things, and that would alleviate a lot of the impacts, because you have to remember, this is 24/7. The residents that live along the road are impacted day and night, and the traffic actually during the night is almost the same as it is during the day.
So what would you like to see done? There is, of course, a highway, Highway 16, going to the casino. Would you like to see that road widened and straightened, or would you like to see some completely different road taking people to the casino?
I think a completely different road would be appropriate. Also, Randy talked about a 10-story hotel, and obviously in a rural, picturesque setting, 10 stories doesn't make it. I personally, we live next door to the casino. I personally asked or offered to Marshall some land that they could move their fire station.
When you say Marshall, you're talking about the chairman of the tribe.
Exactly. Offered to move the fire station over so they had more room to do their building. So I think that shows how much the community is going to be impacted with the lights and the noise and the rest of it. So I think there's other ways of achieving the same results. It doesn't seem the architects have used the best case scenario.
Okay, let's put those two specific points to Randy Takamoto, the road, the access.
I mean, in all practicality, I mean, if there could be another road there, perhaps that might be a solution. But I don't know how you get another road, you know, cut through the valley without impacting, you know, those people whose land the road will traverse.
Are there plans, though, for the tribe to help fund some kind of upgrading of Highway 16?
Well, there's a safety improvement project that's out there that is going to widen the road in some spots and also create turn-off lanes and turning lanes.
What about the height of the hotel, the 10-story hotel tower? Any way to make that shorter?
Not without compromising our design objective. You know, it's based on the number of rooms and how we want to place them. We want to keep it centralized by having the basis of it in close proximity, as I said, to the main casino floor, to the restaurants, as opposed to a campus style, for instance, where it's spread out and now people have to walk long distances, wait, and take shuttles to get to the casino.
Well, I'm no architect, but you could have a 5-story hotel tower that was twice the width.
Well, you know, once again, it's functionality and efficiencies, you know, and you know, we as a hotel casino is laid out, you know, we feel it's a much more functional, much more efficient situation.
And what about the light pollution that Tom Frederick referred to? Casinos often give off a lot of light Does Cache Creek Casino Resort give off a lot of light, and are there plans to reduce the amount of light that it emits?
Well, there's mitigation, and there's technology that, you know, we have present today that may not have been present 5 years ago, 4 years ago, when we designed or when we built our current casino. Obviously, downcast lights are an objective. You know, we want to mitigate that. We want to, you know, not... We want to minimize the impact and effect as much as we can, because we recognize it.
Randy Takamoto of Cache Creek Casino Resort. We're talking about their planned expansions. Mike McGowan, Yolo County Supervisor, joins us. Supervisor, thanks for joining us on Insight.
It's a pleasure being with you this afternoon, Jeffrey.
What's your reaction to Cache Creek's expansions, the plans for expansion?
Well, you know, it's a... There's not a single easy response. From a procedural standpoint, you know, we have to remember that the tribe is seeking to expand their operations on tribal lands. And that, by its very nature, greatly limits and restricts the authority that the local county or the local city, the local jurisdiction has. So in many ways, we'll be reacting to their plans. There has been some movement made essentially in the law through the existing memorandum of understanding we already have with the tribe, and also with the compact that this tribe signed with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, that set out some process for us to deal with. Our main opportunity here is to deal with the tribe, to negotiate with the tribe, not so much about the project itself, but about the impacts of that project on the county and the surrounding community.
Specifically, what would you like to see them do that they're not currently doing or not doing enough of?
Well, we have an MOU with them presently for the existing operation, and since we agreed to that, I'd have to say that we're essentially satisfied with that arrangement. To date, we're really talking about this new expansion. I have to say that, you know, the county does not have complete veto power authority over this project, and so, you know, we're reacting to that as best we can within the framework that we have. The tribe, though, the tribe and the county, this tribe and Yolo County, have evolved gradually but steadily to having a much, much better government-to-government relationship. So to be candid with you, Jeff, I'm putting a lot of faith in our ability to negotiate here with our neighbor, the Rancheria Tribe.
What caused the relations to change? And I'm guessing you're saying improving relations.
Well, I think there's several factors to it. One is this particular tribe has been in that valley for, you know, eons. I mean, a long, long time. I don't exactly know the history, but it predates, you know, the white settlers by maybe thousands of years. This is their home, and they're doing what they can to improve the lot for their family and their tribal members and their community. And Yolo County respects that. Yolo County has a time-honored tradition, a strong tradition of protecting its natural resources. And so, although we may not always agree on how we accomplish the goal, there's a high level of integrity on both the part of the tribe and Yolo County to really preserve and protect and enhance the mm-hmm. good parts of Yolo County, and in this case, the good parts of Cape Hay Valley.
Tom Frederick, have you seen a change in relations between the locals and the tribe and by extension Cache Creek Casino?
Well, you know, let me say this right up front, that I don't think any people that I know have ever had bad relations with any of the tribal members, but you must realize
it was a bit contested a few years ago.
Well, that was not the tribal members, that was the casino.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to bear that in mind, because that's the impact. I mean, Marshall and I have in the past spoken quite friendly, and I don't have any bad things to say about any of the tribal members. But please remember, this is enormous impact that uses an enormous amount of resources. you know, my question would be, I believe that you can check with Randy, but I think that they're looking at a $250 million expansion here, and I would wonder that 50, and I believe there's 50 members of the tribe, could use $250 million in some other way to benefit the tribal members.
Randy, is it a $250 million expansion? Hold on a second. Is it actually a $250 million expansion?
It's sizable. You know, it's a significant number, of course. And, you know, I go back to what I said, Jeffrey, in the beginning. You know, it's the competitive pressures that we see and we feel currently that are here and those that will be coming that we are reacting to. We have to, it's like any other business. You have to evolve, you know, with the changing times. And if you don't, bad things can happen.
Mike McGowan, you were going to say something?
Well, I didn't want to quibble with Tom. I know these folks on the phone very well. It's challenging for us who aren't members of the tribe here, either the local community or the county itself, to really challenge and question sort of the motivation here or really what their plan is. The tribe has been given a set of rights and authorities by the federal government to do certain things. We have a limited role, quite frankly, over telling the tribe what they should do. Our opportunity comes about when we are attempting to talk to them about what are the impacts of their activity. So I'm hesitant to talk about whether they should do this project or not do this project, whether they should have gaming or not gaming, a casino, no casino. That is the decision that's been made by people a lot higher up the food chain than members of the Oakland County Board of Supervisors. We want to have constructive and meaningful conversations with the tribe itself about how we minimize the impacts of their expansion on the valley, and you've already named some of them. Certainly, transportation is a huge one. Water and discharge are others.
Okay.
But there's another component to this that's sort of the nth degree. The tribe is looking at this more and more as a destination end resort than just a casino. And I actually like the direction that I think they're going. And I think that inures to the benefit of Yolo County as well, and it inures to the benefit of folks like Mr.
Okay.
Fredericks. Eventually, not maybe directly as a result of these negotiations, but in the big picture, in the bigger scheme of things, that I think this tribe is really heading in the right direction.
Okay,
now,
let's put that. Hold on a second. We need to start wrapping this up. Randy Takamoto, is Mike McGowan right there that it's moving more in a resort direction than a casino direction?
We are called Cache Creek Casino Resort. You know, most of the square footage of this expansion is for the retail resortish component of the business that we see out there we can generate from.
Last week, when we were talking about Thunder Valley, I asked Doug Elmets, who's a representative of Thunder Valley, if there were plans there for expansion beyond the expansion that's going to start soon. And he said, no, that will be the end of it. There's no more room to build on. Is that the case, too, with Cache Creek Casino Resort, or is there possibly more expansion down the line?
I think I would be very happy, you know, with having the plans that we have on the table right now.
Okay. The public comments on the draft EIR for this planned expansion ended June 16th. The final EIR is now being prepared. If all goes to plan, Randy, when would construction start?
Well, we hope, Jeffrey, to begin construction later this year.
I see.
Later this year.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Randy Takamoto of Cache Creek Casino Resort, and on the phone, Mike McGowan, Yolo County Supervisor, and Tom Frederick of Capey Valley Vineyards. Thank you all very much for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. Coming up, we'll talk about some of the top stories in the news with the Sacramento Bee's Marcus Bertone. We'll be right back. You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Email us suggestions for future topics. Our address is insight@capradio.org. Being seen going green is appealing to businesses these days. Tomorrow in Insight, you'll find out what's behind an offer from a local utility to match your electricity needs with power from renewable resources, but for an extra monthly fee. Also, choreographer Pepper Vaughn, his work in a local production of A Chorus Line is getting rave reviews. It's the first Wednesday of the month. Time for our regular conversation about the news with Marcus Bertone, Sacramento Bee columnist. Marcus, welcome back.
Thank you.
Maybe the most shocking story in Sacramento area news recently has been the spate of robberies and home invasions in Natomas, almost 30 combined since the beginning of June. Any idea what's going on here?
Well, they have, the Sacramento police have 8 young men in custody. We know they're between the ages of 15 and 20. They are from the Natomas area, so they were familiar with the area. They went to Natomas schools, or they weren't going to Natomas schools when they should have been. And they seem to be doing this more for the perverse thrill of it rather than for the gain. I mean, they took some cell phones and things of that nature, but they weren't, you know, home invasions typically are, you know, big hauls, and the stuff that they've been taking is not either great in quantity or in price.
So it seemed to the police that they were doing it for the thrill of holding up people and intimidating them and then moving
intimidating
on.
Intimidating them, that they seem to revel in asserting their manhood and terrifying people. And on that level, they succeeded. They succeeded in terrifying their victims. My understanding that once inside police headquarters that they weren't quite as intimidating. In fact, quite the opposite. But I think it speaks to just a real lack of parental supervision, clearly a real failure on that part. And the point that I tried to make in the column that I wrote for today's paper was that if people ask why these things happen, well, Sacramento's a big city, and in the big city, that you're going to have crime sprees for reasons that have always existed in terms of unemployment and lack of opportunities and just a real lack of supervision.
When you talk about parental supervision, it sounds like you're talking here about kids rather than a professional gang, because that's what you often associate with home invasions.
Yeah, now clearly the police are being cautious right now in terms of releasing too much information. But my understanding is that, you know, there's some of these guys know each other, but it doesn't appear to be sort of a gang related situation to where it's an organized thing. And again, on many levels, it seems really clumsy and poorly thought out. On one level, they were cunning in that these young men were familiar with the area and were seeking out opportunities, open garage doors, women unloading small children from vehicles. And when you think about it that way, it really strikes home. You know, I have 2 small children at home, and it really does. I think the larger point here is that the Natomas neighborhood where it happened all over North Natomas and South Natomas. It's a very connected neighborhood, and people watch out for each other. And if it happens there, it could happen anywhere.
Yeah, the fact that it was all over the place was one thing that really shocked me when I saw the map in the Bee.
Right.
And it's absolutely all over North and South Natomas, and it really seemed almost random. They were almost going out of the way to go all over the place.
Yeah, and you know, we're waiting to see what evidence comes forth either from the police or in any future court trials. But the impression that you get is of young men just sort of driving around looking for an opportunity and going where the opportunity was to try to prey on people.
The story reminded me a bit about the Sacramento mayoral race, because Sacramento's crime problem, or alleged crime problem, was an issue in the race between Kevin
Sure.
Johnson and Heather Fargo. And Kevin Johnson was pointing to 8-year-long statistics
Right.
showing that the city had a growing crime problem. And Heather Fargo was saying, well, if you look at the last few months, then it's been going down. Is this part of a growing crime problem?
Well, I think it's part of a problem that has been there. But I think that we've been in denial as a community about the issue of crime. I think we've been in denial about just how small Sacramento's police department is. And I think that we've been in denial about how large of a region we've become. The expectation that there is not going to be really violent crime or traffic or pollution or all the issues that come with living in a major metropolitan area, they exist here. And I think we've been in denial on all fronts.
My guest is Marcus Bertone, Sacramento Bee columnist. He appears regularly on Insight on the first Wednesday of the month. His columns run every Wednesday and Sunday. Well, Sacramento is often accused of thinking small, but one thing that Sacramento is trying to do that is more about thinking big, the airport expansion, is coming into criticism for that. The airlines are saying, wow, you don't need an airport this big in Sacramento. There'll be a central terminal and, you know, light rail kind of thing within the airport. I mean, it looks like a big deal. The airlines, of course, are hurting. There's higher parking fees taking effect already at the airport. What do you think about that? Do you think Sacramento is getting ahead of itself?
Well, I think that, you know, the market's going to bear that out in terms of whether the expansion will be supported by the airlines. I do think that the B terminal is outdated. It reminds when you travel. I travel quite a bit to the East Coast, so you take some of the major carriers, and you do feel like you're stepping back in time when you go to that terminal. So, you know, it's a major initiative for the county, and again, it's a function of just how large we've become. And I think that people's eyebrows go up because we're not used to thinking about Sacramento in that way, and I really think that it's time that we do.
What do you think about this Sacramento couple who were written about today in the paper? This couple in East Sacramento who tried to do the right thing, I guess. They let their lawn die to help out, you know, because of the drought that seems to be heading our way. A neighbor ratted on them, and the city said, you got to fix it or you owe us hundreds of dollars.
I think it's a metaphor for our times, really, and it particularly is humorous in the context of, again, the mayoral race. Mayor Heather Fargo has made, you know, renewable energy and the environment a big part of her campaign. And yet all of our habits and our culture are designed to go completely against that. And so here you have these poor people, and they're trying to do the right thing. And they're being fined by the very city that you know, Heather Fargo purports to represent. And, you know, she's talking about how we need to become more energy efficient, and these people are doing it. And what's their payoff? They get fined by the city of Sacramento. So, you know, it's one thing to say that we want to go green.
Just don't go brown.
Just
while
don't
you're
go brown while you're going green, and don't try to do the right thing.
Yeah. Another issue that is vexing some people is the whole fireworks issue. Governor Schwarzenegger asked people to not buy fireworks because of the wildfires that were last week. Some people say, well, hey, fireworks are just inherently dangerous, ban them. And others say, this is America, it's an American holiday, I'm going to let off the fireworks.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of the governor, but it seemed to me that was more of a publicity stunt than anything else. It seemed to me that if he was really serious, that he would have just banned it.
Yes.
Just gone ahead and try to ban it, you know. So it's easier said than done. You know, you do worry sometimes in his governorship whether sometimes you do have more style than substance in this case. I don't know, really. I mean, let's be honest. Okay, if you ban the fireworks, is that going to stop the wildfires from burning? I mean, we're California. You know, we've built cities that shouldn't be where they are. We built homes that shouldn't be where they are, you know, and so it's an inherent risk that people take, and I don't know how banning what do they call them?
The safe and sane,
fireworks are going to really keep that from happening.
Did the governor's request affect your own fireworks buying habits, if any?
No. I will be at a gathering on Friday where many a firework will be let off, and I hope the governor doesn't hold it against me.
Marcus Bertone of the Sacramento Bee. His columns are Wednesday and Sunday. He's every first Wednesday of the month on Insight. A few weeks ago, you wrote what I thought was a very moving column about gay marriage. You started out by saying that the earlier in your life you would have been against same-sex marriage. And why did you decide to write that?
You know, I really struggled with that column because I didn't want to write something where I was sort of wagging a finger at people saying that they should support same-sex marriage, because it's a very sensitive issue. For there are a lot of genuinely thoughtful, respectful people who are torn about the issue. And so I wanted to personalize. I typically try to avoid the word I in the column, and I hate columnists who are constantly just Thomas Friedman of the New York Times, for example. He's a brilliant man, but just in love with himself and in love with the word I. And so I try to really use it sparingly. But in this case, how do you bring this issue home to people? And I grew up in a Hispanic Catholic household in the 1970s as a kid, and it just was not an acceptable thing to be gay at that point in time. And thinking back now, I knew people who were gay, just they were in the closet because it wasn't a safe thing. And I can recall saying homophobic remarks and laughing at homophobic jokes. And even in the 18, 19, in my early 20s, the mindset that I had at that time, that if this issue had been before me at that time, I would have opposed it. So what happens? You get older, you meet people, you experience things, and all of a sudden, it just sort of hit me that this is a civil rights issue, and how can we, just from a legal standpoint, how can we deny people? What justification do we have? And I don't think people being uncomfortable or citing the Bible or whatever, that's just not, to me, that's just not good enough. And so I was trying to find a way. By maybe kind of exposing myself in a way to make the issue a little more real, less me sort of shaking a finger at somebody and more sharing about a thought process that's led me to this point to where I'm actually quite in favor of it. And hopefully people responded to it.
People can attach comments to stories at sankb.com. Yeah. And I've noticed that you've started mixing it up with the people who post comments.
I have.
And typically, the writers at the Bee don't do that.
Yeah.
Why did you start doing it, and how do you feel when you're doing it?
They asked me to. The editors at the Bee asked me to. I'm a columnist, so I have more latitude than a news reporter would and does. And so they asked me to. I was happy to do it. I've been trying to find a way to communicate with readers. Okay, so I went into it with a real naive perspective at first, thinking that somehow I could elevate the conversation. And that naive thought process lasted about a second and a half.
Gets a bit scary there sometimes.
Yeah, it did. And so then I had to really readjust the way I was going to do it. And at first I was being really careful. But then after a while I thought, you know, some of these folks are coming on with real high-octane comments, and I'm just going to sort of respond in kind. Clearly, I'm not going to, you know, the rule of thumb I have is I'm not going to write anything that I wouldn't want to see printed in the paper. So right away, that sets a standard that's good to follow. But after that, I had no problem at all with challenging, you know, some of the more knuckleheaded comments that were posted.
Some of the comments on your column today were flagged for review. You can't see them.
Yeah.
And last Friday, there was a story about the Yolo County Sheriff's deputies problem,
right,
where they filled and locked a courtroom.
Right.
And there were a couple of dozen, I think, comments were flagged for review. What can be done about this? It's really not very appealing or helpful when you see all these deleted comments.
It's not. You know, it's an issue that we're working through internally. You know, anybody can flag anything, which is great, and it's a problem as well.
And anyone can see anything about anyone when you don't have your name attached.
When you don't have your name attached, which is the thing that you know, when you think about it, can kind of rank a little bit, that it's sort of like a crank call sometimes where you're hiding behind the anonymity of something. Some of the comments legitimately need to be flagged because they're offensive and racist, you know, intolerant, just stupid, and you know, some of these people just think that they're so funny, and they're not. They're just not. Not only are they not funny, some of these people are just complete idiots. God bless them. You know, they read the Bee and they have a right to their opinion. But some of the opinions just, you know, I mean, they go beyond the pale. They're not funny. They're not instructive. They're not anything but offensive or racist or intolerant. And if you sort of hit that standard, yeah, you're going to get flagged.
Are the people at the Bee who don't go read the comments because they just don't want to see what's said?
Yeah, you know, they say they don't, but That's not true. I think everybody reads the comments. I read all the comments on my columns. And I'm a very twisted individual that I derive pleasure from those things. There are some of my colleagues are quite sensitive and really shouldn't be reading them. I enjoy it, which I don't think speaks very well of me, actually.
Finally, and if non-soccer fans will indulge us, there's a Mexican soccer game coming to Raleigh Field, July 13th. Cruz Azul and Tigres.
Tigres, yeah.
Cruz Azul are a pretty big team, aren't
they? Pretty big team. They're sort of the best of the rest in the Mexican league. You know, the major teams that are favored by the Mexican residents of Sacramento are America. They play in Mexico City, which is like the New York Yankees of the Mexican leagues, or Chivas of Guadalajara, which is like the Los Angeles Dodgers of the Mexican leagues. And so we would think, well, God, wouldn't it be great if one of those teams came to Sacramento? Well, one of those teams wouldn't come to Sacramento because they could attract such a large crowd. They would play at the Oakland Coliseum or at Stanford Stadium or some a much larger venue. So I have no doubt that Raleigh will be sold out. It's unfortunate the field isn't long enough.
For a
real soccer game. So they didn't. It's not sanctioned by FIFA. It's just a complete off-the-charts friendly. But it's great that they're here. And I wish that, and I know that the people at Raleigh Field wish that they'd had the foresight to have the flexibility to make the stadium bigger, because I think people are realizing now that Sacramento could be a great venue for an MLS team. I've advocated for in the column, and I would just love it if we had soccer to talk about on the show once a month, and people would just have to deal with it, and they will realize what a great sport it really is.
Indeed. Well, thanks so much. Marcus Bertone of the Sacramento Bee. His columns are every Wednesday and Sunday. He appears regularly on Insight the first Wednesday of the month. Marcus, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Insight. Coming up, we'll talk about fireworks. We'll be right back. You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. I'm Jeffrey Callison. You can download Insight details at capradio.org/insight. It's fireworks time for many people, even though Governor Schwarzenegger recently suggested Californians skip buying fireworks this year to reduce the risk of wildfires. Let's try and answer some fireworks questions you might have, starting with what makes some fireworks safe and sane. Joining us is Kate Dargan, who's the California State Fire Marshal. Kate Dargan, welcome to Insight.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you very much.
What are safe and sane fireworks?
Those are the fireworks that we approve in California through the State Fire Marshal's Office that never leave the ground.
So is that the number one, or is that the sole factor?
But it is the primary factor. If you're trying to quickly distinguish between those that represent a public safety hazard and are illegal, those are the aerial fireworks, or fireworks that shoot out and can basically be airborne, as opposed to safe and sane, which stick to the ground.
So if they go up in the air, they are by definition not quote-unquote safe and sane.
That's correct.
Okay. Also with us is Dave Hillman, who's in charge of enforcement at CAL FIRE. Dave Hillman, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Tell us more about the process of deciding whether or not a firework is safe and sane.
Well, the material is submitted to the State Fire Marshal's Office for analysis. And sometimes the analysis may be fairly simple. We look at it, we see what it does, and it meets our safety requirements and acts very similar to things that have been improved before. If a manufacturer submits a relatively new device to us, we'll actually submit it to a lab where they'll analyze the contents to make sure it's not terribly toxic, make sure it's not explosive in nature, and then we will again observe the behavior. And as long as it falls within the parameters of being safe, not providing an inordinate threat to the public, then we would authorize it to use our insignia on it and approve it as a safe and sane device.
Are the manufacturers required to submit the fireworks to your department?
Yes, they are. Any firework that's sold legally in California has to have the State Fire Marshal's basically seal of approval on it, and that means it has been submitted to us for analysis.
Kate Dargan, the State Fire Marshal, is there a problem with rogue manufacturers using a fake logo for the State Fire Marshal's office?
We've had that enforcement concern at different times. I don't want to say it's a rogue manufacturer, but those you know, there are those who try to ship fireworks illegally into the state or sell them to folks who knowingly bring them illegally into the state. And sometimes they do try to slap that seal on it and hope that it will escape detection when they hit enforcement operations.
I see. Are there fireworks legally sold in California that are, you know, reasonably safe fireworks to use, relatively speaking, but are not officially considered safe and sane? Is there such a thing, Dave Hillman?
Well, there are a group of fireworks called novelty or popper fireworks, and they're actually sold in grocery stores and supermarkets. They are generally spring-activated, so they're not a firework per se, but they shoot out paper or confetti or streamers, and they have the state fire marshal seal on them. They're approved for use. Very similar to the devices you see at stores, sometimes at novelty stores or party stores, are called party poppers, where they have a little snap in them, and then they shoot streamers out. So those are not technically safe and sane fireworks, but they are approved for use, and we authorize their use anytime throughout the year in California.
Yes. Kate Dargan, there's a window, I believe, for selling safe and sane fireworks. Is there also a window for using them?
Yes. Most jurisdictions require that they're allowed for use on July 4th. That varies sometimes with local ordinance, but they close out and are not usable for general purpose throughout the remainder of the year other than the July 4th season.
And finally, Kate Dargan, did your office suggest to Governor Schwarzenegger that he request that Californians not buy fireworks this year?
We had a conversation this year once the lightning siege occurred, which, you know, as a kind of a backdrop to this discussion, was the worst that we had ever had at this period of time for lightning, the number of fires. We did have conversations between the CAL FIRE, the Fire Marshal's Office, and the Governor's Office about what was the appropriate way to handle any of the risks this year based on the fact that almost literally all firefighters that were available are deployed at this time, either covering their home stations or responding to the request for CAL FIRE for assistance.
Yes. Well, thank you both very much. Kate Dargan, California State Fire Marshal at the Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, and Dave Hillman, who's in charge of enforcement at CAL FIRE. I appreciate you both joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Very much.
Thank you. We'll continue our fireworks discussion. On the phone is Julie Heckman of the American Pyrotechnics Association, which I guess is fancy for fireworks. Julie, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
How did the fireworks industry respond or react when they heard that Governor Schwarzenegger asked Californians not to buy fireworks this year?
Well, I think it was very encouraging for the governor to allow the locals to make that decision. I think one thing that we've learned over the years is that when a state has a complete prohibition on fireworks, they tend to become readily available, and there's not a strong safety message communicated. So I think the governor was very wise in allowing this to be regulated on the local level, where fire support, if needed, could set up and create designated use areas so that the public could enjoy the 4th of July holiday.
Does the fireworks industry support California's Safe and Sane program, whereby manufacturers submit fireworks to the California State Fire Marshal's Office and then they're tested and designated safe and sane or not?
Well, you know, the California program was probably the first one to come out with that Safe and Sane designation, and clearly the industry stands behind that. There are a number of states that have adopted similar requirements, although they're not using the official term, safe and sane, but a number of states have kind of followed suit and have decided that that category of fireworks is what they'll allow.
How would you recommend people determine whether they're being confronted with illegal fireworks? Any telltale signs?
Well, you know, clearly, usually those things are sold under the table. You know, somebody will say, well, let me show you the good stuff. You know, please, to the public, buy what's legal in your state and only in your location. If fireworks are not permitted, please go to a public display. You know, it's important to obey those laws. And it's also important that, especially for the folks in California, you know, given the fire situation, please be safe and responsible. Take extra precautions. You know, make certain that you are using your fireworks in an area that is not at risk.
Yes.
If the grass appears to be even the slightly, you know, slight amount of dryness, wet it down with a garden hose. Run your sprinkler system. Have that bucket of water handy.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Julie. I appreciate you joining us.
Well, thank you. Have a safe 4th of July.
Thank you. That's Julie Heckman of the American Pyrotechnics Association. Also with us now, Bob Weaver. He's a lifelong fireworks fan who publishes the website fireworksland.com. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Jeffrey.
You live in Southern California, so you're in California. How did you react to Governor Schwarzenegger's request that we not buy fireworks?
Well, I'm not surprised considering the fire situation, but I think people can still safely use the Safe and Sane fireworks in California as long as they follow safety instructions and use common sense.
What are your favorite Safe and Sane fireworks?
Well, every year they come out with a few new ones. This year they have Rock Around the Clock, Blooming Flower, Solid Fuel Rocket Boosters. Those are a few of the new ones this year.
What does Rock Around the Clock do?
That's a fountain that sits on the ground and it sprays fans of sparks. Plus, it has a spinner in the front that spins around on the clock face.
Is that pushing it at the margins of Safe and Sane?
If it passed the state fire marshal's testing for Safe and Sane, then it's fine. I think it does fall within the guidelines for Safe and Sane.
Yeah. And what do fireworks fans make of illegal fireworks? Is there a temptation to use them? Because they're presumably, I'm guessing, oftentimes louder, travel higher up in the air, more spectacular.
Well,
but on the other hand, they're dangerous.
In other states that allow other types of fireworks, they're commonly sold in other states, mostly in the Midwest and even in Nevada in some areas. So there's a temptation to buy them there, but you should not use them in a state where they're not legal.
Do you go to Nevada or other places to see fireworks that you can't see in California?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to, you can go to Nevada and you can buy fireworks there, but you should shoot them off there in the place where they're legal to. You should not bring them back into California where they're not legal.
Okay. Bob Weaver, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
That's Bob Weaver, lifelong fireworks fan, at the website fireworksland.com. And finally, we want to check in with a non-profit organization that raises funds by selling fireworks and see how they're doing. Ron Roberts of the Drowning Accident Rescue Team, or DART. Welcome to Insight.
Hi, Jeffrey. How are you doing?
Well, I'm fine. As you, of course, know, Governor Schwarzenegger asked people not to buy fireworks this year because of the wildfire risk. How did your group respond to that?
Well, obviously, I think we're understandable of the reasons for it and the reasons why. However, you know, we've planned this for a year now, and those funds that are made off of this are part of the operating funds of our organization.
How much money are we talking about?
For us, it ranges, I would say on an average around $10,000 or so, which, you know, is a sizable amount out of anybody's operating budget, especially a nonprofit.
If you didn't have that money suddenly this year, what would happen to your services?
Well, the first thing that we talked about from our board is whether or not we needed to cut out some training that we have scheduled. And our training is very important to us, obviously, for what we do. And obviously, we're going to have to make cuts. And, you know, since already half of the year is over with, these funds are going to get us through the remainder of the second half of the year. So, you know, we have some very hard decisions to make, and without the funds, training was one of the things that we were probably going to have to cut.
It sounds like you're saying that your sales are down this year.
I think our sales are, I think they're noticeably down. And that has to do, obviously, also with the economy, not just what Governor Schwarzenegger had said. So I think it's, you know, we've got two things probably going against the fireworks a little bit this year, but obviously we're hoping to have a successful year.
And very quickly, Ron, do you know percentage-wise how much you're down this year so far?
Not yet. I don't. Our biggest days are coming up, and that'll be tomorrow and obviously Friday,
okay,
which is the 4th. And you have to understand, state workers and so forth and so on just got paid on the 1st. And so,
see what happens.
Traditionally, the biggest sales are on the last 2 days.
And we'll have to wrap it up there. Ron Roberts of Drowning Accident Rescue Team, or DART, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Insight for today. I'm Jeffrey Callison. For more information about the guests and topics on our program, go to our webpage, capradio.org/insight. Today's associate producers were Donna Lee and Lynn Weaver. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, the assistant producer, Robin Souza, and the senior producer, Jen Picard. Thank you for joining us.